In the Name of the Child, explain how grief can manifest itself as anger.
Loss, whether that of a loved one, the intact family, cherished hopes and dreams, or the threatened loss of one's own children, evokes powerful feelings of anxiety, sadness, and fear of being abandoned and alone. Some people have difficulty acknowledging these feelings. Instead, they seal over their grief with anger and try to prevent the inevitable separation by embroiling their spouse in unending disputes. Fighting and arguing are ways of maintaining contact, albeit of a negative kind. Even throughout the fighting, these same individuals harbor reconciliation fantasies. People who have suffered a dramatic loss in the past, example given, parental death or divorce, may be also reacting to these earlier unresolved traumas. Identity and aggression. A woman whose husband divorces her loses her identity as wife. A woman whose children are grown may feel as if she's lost her identity as mother. In the face of real or perceived losses, people with BPD may feel empty, insignificant, helpless, unable to survive. Johnston and Roseby believe this may lead people to adopt a false front of being fiercely independent, refusing to negotiate lest they lose part of themselves. They call this, "I fight, therefore I am." People may also become overly dependent and clingy, or alternate between aggression and clinginess. BPs who see themselves as victims may thus feel that distortion campaigns help give them an identity. Shame and blame. Divorce and relationship problems can also spark feelings of rejection, which in turn evoke feelings of inadequacy, failure, shame, and humiliation. As you know, people with BPD often feel awash in shame and have low self-esteem. They may then try to cover up with a mask of absolute competency. Johnston and Roseby say that this exaggerated sense of failure may lead people to try to rid themselves of all blame by proving that the other person is totally inadequate or irresponsible. The authors write, "The fragile self-esteem of these people depends on keeping all sense of failure outside the self, so they present themselves with a self-righteous air of angry superiority and entitlement, and accuse the ex-spouse of being psychologically and morally inferior." When a psychologically vulnerable BP views the spouse's desertion as a total devastating attack, he or she may develop paranoid ideas of betrayal, exploitation, and conspiracy. Johnston and Roseby write, "As the spouse surveys the rubble of their marriage, they begin to rewrite history and perceive their partner as having intentionally plotted and planned from the outset to exploit and cast them off." At that point, they say, the betrayed spouse may respond aggressively with a counterattack that becomes the central obsession in his or her life. The spouse, along with any allies, is viewed as dangerous and aggressive. Having been wronged, these people feel justified in seeking retaliation, or, more urgently, they believe in launching a preemptive strike. Their motto is, "Attack before being attacked." Assessing your risk. In analyzing dozens of distortion campaigns, we noticed several similarities. BPs who set up distortion campaigns often claim to have had a history of being victimized by others. Sometimes they even described how they sought revenge against people who they said had victimized them in the past. The borderlines often possessed the ability to appear calm, logical, and persuasive under certain circumstances. However, when under emotional distress or alone with the non-BPs, they appeared to lose contact with reality or become paranoid. Non-BPs victimized by distortion campaigns often viewed themselves as protectors and caretakers. As a result, they had great difficulty looking out for their own best interests. Many overlooked warning signs, disregarded admonitions from friends, denied what was happening, and refused to take precautions or defend themselves. It is hard for most people to accept that someone they love could do something to hurt them. If love for the BP in your life, or happy memories of the good times you shared, are preventing you from protecting yourself, it's essential that you understand that the BP may not feel the same way. Splitting may render the BP unable to remember the good feelings he or she had for you, or to see you as a whole person with both good and bad qualities. As a result, the BP may view you as an evil monster who deserves to be punished. The sooner you realize this, the better chance you have of emerging from a distortion campaign with your dignity and rights intact. Most complaints of distortion campaigns came from men and women who had recently asked for a divorce from a BP partner or who had broken up with a borderline girlfriend or boyfriend. Parents of borderline children were the second most frequent source of complaints, followed by children of borderline parents. Combating distortion campaigns. First, an important disclaimer. Each person's situation is different, and each person with BPD is unique. The right approach for one person could be totally wrong for another, even if the situations seem similar. The following guidelines may help. Before you take action, consult with a qualified mental health professional who is familiar with your unique situation. If the allegations involve the law, it's vital that you discuss the situation with a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Secondly, recognize that BPD is a mental disorder. People who have it deserve to be treated with sensitivity, respect, and dignity. Protect yourself, but don't try to hurt the other person out of spite or revenge. For example, it might be prudent to remove your clothing and personal belongings from the house before asking for a divorce. However, hiring a moving company and taking half of everything the two of you own is probably going too far. In fact, it might understandably trigger a hostile response. Reduce your vulnerability. The best way to handle a distortion campaign is to prevent it from happening. If you can't do this, be proactive and protect yourself as much as you can, legally, financially, and emotionally. Some distortion campaigns seem to occur for no discernible reason, but others seem to be triggered by actions the BP perceives as hostile. Start with these steps. Consider any major actions you may be taking that involve the BP, anything from setting limits to seeking a divorce. What kind of reaction might you anticipate from the BP? Consider yourself. What are your vulnerable areas, and what could you do ahead of time to guard against any actions the BP may take? Hope for the best, prepare for the worst. Non-BPs have found that typical areas of concern include their finances, children, property, job, reputation, and friendships. Formulate a plan and implement it before you take any action that could trigger the BP. Consider the example of Lyndia and Alicia. Lyndia needs to tell her borderline daughter, Alicia, that Alicia can't come home from the residential facility for the upcoming weekend. The last time Alicia came home for a visit, she threatened to burn down the house if Lyndia wouldn't let her spend the night with her drug-abusing boyfriend. Lyndia knows from experience that after Alicia hears the news, she will immediately go to her counselors, grandparents, and anyone else who will listen and possibly believe Alicia's story, and tell them that Lyndia hates her, and always has, and that her behavior is spotless, and that Lyndia is a bad parent. So, before Lyndia tells Alicia the news, she communicates the reasoning for her decision to anyone who might become involved. By the time Alicia speaks with them, they will already know what is going on. Consider not responding. There may be times when responding in any way at all simply prolongs the BP's abusive actions. That is because this entire matter may be an effort on his or her part to keep you engaged in the relationship. Any response, particularly an emotional one, may reward the behavior. Think through the short-term and long-term ramifications of the other person's actions. If the consequences are insignificant or simply embarrassing, or if you believe the BP is trying to goad you into more contact with him or her, it may be best simply to let the matter go. Answer questions without being defensive. Allison was alternately suicidal and incensed when Luke broke up with her. She called Luke at work several times a day, screaming at him and begging him to take her back. When Luke had his work number changed, Allison retaliated by calling Luke's boss, David, and informing him that Luke often snorted cocaine while at work. "Luke's a crackhead," she insisted. "Don't trust him." Naturally, David confronted Luke with Allison's accusation. Several years earlier, Luke had tried cocaine at work when it was offered to him by one of the stagehands, but it had happened just once. Other than that, Luke was a responsible employee and did not drink or use drugs on the job. Luke owned up to what he had done, but emphasized that it had happened just once. Luke also explained what was going on without intruding upon Allison's privacy any more than was necessary. Luckily, David understood and did not fire Luke for violating the company's drug policy. A BP may also tell family, friends, and acquaintances untrue things about you. Before you decide whether to respond, ask yourself what you hope to achieve. Do you want to clear your name, or is there something tangible at stake, such as the loss of friendship of people who are important to you? When consequences of the BP's actions are relatively minor, it may be best to act in a way that reveals the lie for what it is. For example, if the BP in your life tells the neighbors that your new wife is a shrew, it may be best to simply let them meet her and make their own decisions. However, if the BP in your life tells the neighbors you've been arrested for battering her and their opinion matters a great deal to you, you may wish to try to set the record straight. When talking with people about false accusations, keep the following guidelines in mind. Act calm, composed, and in control, no matter how upset you feel. Validate the other person's concerns before explaining the facts. Say that if the rumors had been true, it would be a very serious matter. Do not disparage the BP, no matter how much you think he or she deserves it. Instead, sincerely express your concern for the BP or acknowledge your own confusion about why the BP would say such things. Be cautious about discussing BPD or any other psychological problem. People may misunderstand and think you are trying to belittle the BP. Realize that you cannot control what other people think about you. Say what you need to say, and then let it go. Benjamin, non-BP. Here's what I said to a neighbor who wrongly believed I'd been violent toward my former wife. I'd like to clear the air about something. It may make you a bit uncomfortable, and I understand that, because it makes me uncomfortable, too. But it's important, so I'm willing to stick my neck out. I heard that my former wife, Cassidy, told you that I was arrested for battering her. Someone told me that she had some cuts on her arm, and she was showing them to people and saying that I attacked her. I wouldn't blame you if you felt horrible and didn't want to talk to me. If I thought that someone I knew had done such a thing, I would probably avoid them too. But it never happened. The divorce hasn't been easy, it's true, but I never did anything remotely like that, and I'm very concerned for Cassidy's sake, both that she would tell this to people and that somehow her arm is being cut. I'll understand if you feel confused and wonder about what really happened, but we've known each other for a while, and I did want to set the record straight with you. I appreciate your listening. Prepare for false accusations of abuse from BP children. Children who falsely accuse parents of abuse is a growing phenomenon. Reasons for doing this include revenge for perceived abuse, retaliation for being treated unfairly, and an attempt to split their parents' loyalty to one another. Dealing with false accusations. As you may suspect, an angry child's phone call to 911 or the local child protection agency can have devastating effects on the family. Typical investigations can often take more than a month to complete. In the meantime, the accused parent is often ordered by the court to stay away from the child and temporarily live outside the family home. The child is often required to remain with the other parent, who experiences the conflict of trying to be supportive and loyal to both the child and to a spouse or partner. The family's friends, relatives, and employers may be caught in the same trap of feeling that they must either demonstrate support for the child or loyalty toward the accused parent. In our interview with attorney Charles Jameson, he advised that the parents of a child who makes false accusations do the following. Keep detailed records documenting the child's diagnosis or BPD behaviors. Examples include letters from school authorities, medical records, court papers, and reports that unsubstantiate prior allegations. This will enhance your credibility. Keep a diary of your activities, including where you were, who you were with, and what you did. If allegations come weeks or months after the supposed event, this may provide you with an alibi. Ask your other children if they would be willing to help explain your innocence to the authorities. If necessary, make sure that a third party is present when you are with the child. Take all accusations seriously. They may quickly snowball out of control. If you need to, hire an attorney who specializes in false accusations. Coping with your feelings. From an emotional perspective, there are some things to keep in mind that can help you cope with the situation. Usually, false accusations center around abuse or neglect. Therefore, they are followed up with investigations by your county's social service department or child protection unit. While the investigation will seem to be accusatory, remember that the investigation is merely a fact-finding process. Only hard evidence can be used to render charges. Remember that being defensive and uncooperative can hurt your case. Do not take questions personally. Keep telling yourself that the process is necessary to ferret out real cases of abuse. In some cases, parents may be separated from their children while the investigation is going on. Siblings of the borderline child need to know that the separation is temporary and that they may be asked questions during the investigation. Stress your love for them and the need to answer the legal authorities' questions honestly. Finally, remind yourself that BPD is a mental illness. Anger toward your borderline child is normal. However, remember that the illness is really to blame, not the child. If the BP is trying to hurt you by mounting a distortion campaign, you might consider the BP to be your enemy. In reality, your enemies are denial, doing nothing about the problem in hopes that it will go away, wishful thinking, doing nothing because you're sure that a miracle will occur and the BP will have a change of heart, emotionality, reacting emotionally rather than remaining calm and thinking through logical solutions to your problem, martyrdom, doing nothing because you can't bear to hurt the BP's feelings, which you may think are more important than your own, isolation, trying to handle the problem by yourself instead of asking for help, legal delays, not hiring the right attorney before you lose legal rights and the situation becomes critical. Most non-BPs find that if they react quickly and logically and obtain the right legal help when needed, distortion campaigns sputter and fail. The truth has a way of revealing itself, and lies are eventually exposed for what they are. By acting appropriately, you can help that occur sooner rather than later. Chapter 12. What Now? Making Decisions About Your Relationship. People who care about someone with BPD are usually in a great deal of pain. Staying in the relationship as it is seems unbearable, but leaving seems unthinkable or impossible. If you feel this way, you are not alone. Nearly every non-BP we spoke with echoed the same sentiments, but you do have options, even if you can't see them right now. This chapter will help you think through your choices and come to a personal decision that feels right for you. Predictable stages. People who love someone with BPD seem to go through similar stages. The longer the relationship has lasted, the longer each stage seems to take. Although these are listed in the general order in which people go through them, most people move back and forth among different stages. Confusion stage. This generally occurs before a diagnosis of BPD is known. Non-BPs struggle to understand why borderlines sometimes behave in ways that seem to make no sense. They look for solutions that seem elusive, blame themselves, or resign themselves to living in chaos. Even after learning about BPD, it can take non-BPs weeks or months to really comprehend on an intellectual level how the BP is personally affected by this complex disorder. It can take even longer to absorb the information on an emotional level. Outer-directed stage. In this stage, non-borderlines turn their attention toward the person with the disorder, urge the BP to seek professional help, attempting to get him or her to change, try their best not to trigger problematic behavior, learn all they can about BPD in an effort to understand and empathize with the person they care about. It can take non-BPs a long time to acknowledge feelings of anger and grief, especially when the BP is a parent or child. Anger is an extremely common reaction, even though most non-BPs understand on an intellectual level that BPD is not the borderline's fault. Yet because anger seems to be an inappropriate response to a situation that may be beyond the borderline's control, non-BPs often suppress their anger and instead experience depression, hopelessness, and guilt. The chief tasks for non-BPs in this stage include acknowledging and dealing with their own emotions, letting BPs take responsibility for their own actions, giving up the fantasy that BPs will behave as the non-BPs would like them to. Inner directed stage. Eventually, non-BPs look inward and conduct an honest appraisal of themselves. It takes two people to have a relationship, and the goal for non-BPs in this stage is to better understand their role in making the relationship what it now is. The objective here is not self-recrimination, but insight and self-discovery. Decision-making stage. Armed with knowledge and insight, non-BPs struggle to make decisions about the relationship. This stage can often take months or years. Non-BPs in this stage need to clearly understand their own values, beliefs, expectations, and assumptions. For example, one man with a physically violent, borderline wife came from a conservative family that strongly disapproved of divorce. His friends counseled him to separate from her, but he felt unable to do so because of his concern about how his family would react. You may find that your beliefs and values have served you well throughout your life, or you may find that you inherited them from your family without determining whether they truly reflect who you are. Either way, it is important to be guided by your own values, not someone else's. Resolution phase. In this final stage, non-BPs implement their decisions and live with them. Depending on the type of relationship, some non-BPs may, over time, change their minds many times and try different alternatives. Beyond black and white. It is easy to adopt the BP's black and white way of thinking and believe you have only two choices, stay or go. But many other options also exist. For example, leaving the situation temporarily whenever the BP violates your limits, taking a temporary break, days, weeks, or months, from the relationship, learning to depersonalize the BP's actions, remaining in the relationship but living apart, making the relationship less close, spending less time with the BP, achieving balance by cultivating your own interests, friends, and meaningful activities, telling the BP that you will remain in the relationship only if he or she is willing to work with a therapist or make specific changes. This means holding the BP to any promise he or she makes, and it may mean leaving if he or she violates such a promise. Putting off making a decision until you feel comfortable making one. Putting off making a decision until you see a therapist and work on some of your own issues. Questions to ask yourself. These are questions you should ask yourself about your current relationship with your BP partner. Most of these questions address important needs that should be met in relationships. The answers to these questions can provide you with some direction on how to proceed in the relationship. Generally, the more needs and wants that go unfulfilled, and the more unbalanced the attention and energy in the relationship, the more likely it is that the relationship is unhealthy. What do I want from this relationship? What do I need from this relationship? How open can I be with my feelings with this person? Am I putting myself in physical danger by staying in this relationship? How will this decision affect any children? How does this relationship affect my self-esteem? Do I love myself as much as I love the borderline? Have I accepted the fact that the BP will change only if and when he or she is ready to do so? Am I able to wait until that happens or live with things the way they are if it never happens? What practical considerations do I need to consider, particularly financial ones? Do I believe that I have the right to be happy? Do I believe that I am only worthwhile when I am sacrificing myself for others? When am I currently the most content? When I am with this person, when I am alone, or when I am with others? Do I have the energy and fortitude to go against my family or other people who might be upset with my decision? Am I truly making my own decision, or am I doing what other people want me to do? What are the legal ramifications of my decision? If a friend was in my place and told me the story of this relationship, what advice would I give them? When children are involved. One non-BP says, I am not one who believes that unhappy people should stay together for the sake of the children. I think they would be far better off living with one happy parent than one miserably unhappy parent and one who is completely delusional. While many parents worry about the effect of divorce on children, Janet R. Johnston, Ph.D., executive director of the Judith Wallerstein Center for the Family in Transition, said in our interview that studies consistently find that children's exposure to unresolved conflict and verbal and physical abuse is a better predictor of children's adjustment than the marital status of their parents. According to Johnston, children do the best in a happy, intact marriage with both parents present. Next best is a divorce in which the parents protect the children from conflict. Third best is an unhappy, intact marriage in which children are exposed to unresolved conflict and verbal abuse. Worst of all is a conflict-ridden divorce where the children are put in the middle. Chosen relationships. When it comes to chosen relationships, we found that the BP's willingness to admit he or she had a problem and seek help was by far the determining factor as to whether the couple stayed together or not. Of the hundreds of people we spoke with, when the BPs were truly committed to recovery, non-BPs were almost always willing to stand by them and help them through it. But when BPs refused to take any responsibility for the couple's problems, no matter how hard non-BPs tried to rescue the relationship usually ended. Richard, non-BP. I stayed with my wife for the same reasons I fell in love with her. She is bright, beautiful, witty, passionate, and fun. When we got married, I didn't know she had borderline personality disorder. In fact, I didn't know what BPD was until it was clinically diagnosed. I knew early on that there were problems. Sometimes they were frustrating, sometimes they made me angry, sometimes they scared the hell out of me. No matter what, however, she was still the person I loved who just happened to have a mental illness. Even during the worst of it, I never considered leaving. I wasn't about to throw away a relationship so easily, especially one where so much of it was good. She was very sick, but I could always see the good in her. After her 4 years of therapy and hospitalizations, our marriage is very close. The reward for loyalty has been great. The same passion, the same beauty, the same wit that attracted me to her in the first place are all there. But the fear and confusion of BPD are gone. Rhoda, non-BP. I have broken up with my BPD boyfriend many times. When he is able to see what he is doing, apologize for it, and tell me how he is going to change, I go back. To me, he is worth it. He is a kind, beautiful, passionate, generous man. I have never met anyone in my life who has made me feel more loved. And he can't destroy me because he does not define me. I do. And I am very fortunate to have a moderate BP. He is not prone to rages or violent outbursts, doesn't cheat on me, and makes a sincere effort to modify his behavior. This relationship suits me because I sometimes have a strong need for privacy and solitude. I take the time to be alone and enjoy other things without him. I am aware of the risks, but I love him, and I plan to enjoy his presence in my life as long as I can. Marie, non-BP. My soon-to-be ex-husband gave me a surprise visit this afternoon. The conversation started out all business and finances, but then the conversation changed.
He said I hadn't given him a chance. 20 years of chances are obviously not enough. I guess he forgot he threatened to kill me in no uncertain terms. Silly me, can't I just get over the death threat? I could go on with the twisted logic, the convenient amnesia, and the transparent manipulation, but I will get to the point, which is, there is no point. He just doesn't get it. It was my job to seek the proper ways to communicate with him, my job to set boundaries, my job to understand the illness. What was his part? What kind of relationship can you have when one person must do all of the work? What kind of relationship is it when one person must have all of the understanding, have all of the forgiveness, and do all of the giving to the needy other? He called me a few hours later and began sighing on the phone that he might as well quit his job. He told me he was eyeballing a handgun in the house where he now lives. It took every fiber of me to hang up, but I did hang up. I released him to his own pitiful misery. I didn't even know the power still existed within me, but it does, and it's perfectly okay for me to own my own feelings again. As I'm writing this, I'm watching my 8-year-old fill a decorative birdcage full of oatmeal cookies. It's his science project. Why is this relevant? Because he's free and safe to be himself, without risk of raging or verbal abuse from someone he should have been able to trust. Because his mother is free and safe to just let him be an 8-year-old. Because all of us non-BPs have this option, and there should be no apologies forthcoming for an illness we did not cause. Fill the bird cages with cookies, pour milk all over them, eat them with your fingers and make a big mess. Laugh until your sides ache. Cry when something is wrong. Spend some time doing absolutely nothing. Say what you mean and mean what you say. Invest in your own sanity for once. Unchosen relationships. With unchosen relationships, such as those with BP parents, minor children, or minor siblings, sometimes the choice is not to stay or go as much as it is to set and observe your limits and not let the BP's problems overwhelm your own life. But that doesn't mean you need to feel helpless and hopeless. While you may not be able to end the relationship or break up, you can set limits on how much contact you have with that person and how much of your energy you invest in maintaining the relationship. With unchosen relationships, you need to be the one in charge. Identify your emotional and physical boundaries. Reinforce the limits you set in the relationship with your BP by consistent modeling and consistent responding to the disturbing behavior of the BP. As an adult, when the relationship causes too much pain and your relative is unwilling to change, you have the option to temporarily or permanently step away. Sylvia, non-BP. I love my borderline son, John, very much. For many years I lived or died depending on how well he was doing. Was he drinking again? Getting involved with self-destructive women? Spending all of his money on things he didn't need? I continually gave him cash and provided him with a place to stay when yet another one of his roommates threw him out. I listened to him as he ranted and raved and blamed me and his father for everything that had ever gone wrong in his entire life. Things changed after my husband had a heart attack. Paul is doing well now, but for a while we weren't sure if he was going to pull through. This crisis helped me realize that I was concentrating on my son so much I was losing myself, my husband, and my relationship with my daughter. I had to back away from my son's chaos. I set some personal limits around bailing him out and listening to his tirades. John wasn't happy about our new limits. He cut us off totally for 3 years. That was very painful. But eventually, John decided that having a relationship with us, with limits, was better than no relationship at all. We see him about once a month. There are phone calls, too. It's strained, but I can live with that. I feel like a human being again, with goals, dreams, and happiness. Everyone benefited from the limits, even John, I think. He learned that he can manage to run his life without us. I still wish that I could have a closer relationship with my son. I wish that he would take care of himself more and get help. But I've learned to accept that I can't change John. I can only love him and be the best mother I know how to be,
while still loving myself and caring for the rest of my family. Healing and hope. Whatever you decide, there can be healing and hope. Healing when a relationship ends, and hope for your loved one's recovery from BPD. Many people from the Welcome to Oz online support group, www.bpdcentral.com, resolved their relationship with the BPs in their lives years ago, but they stay on the list to provide support to others and to assure them that life does indeed get better after a relationship with a borderline. Marilyn, non-BP. It has been 10 years since my divorce from my borderline ex-husband, and I am still dealing with the after effects. I spent so much time trying to hide his behavior from others that it left its mark upon me. Trust in others, faith in the world, these were the things that were destroyed in me. Yet now, in most ways, life couldn't be better. I am a happy and confident person. The experience taught me many things about myself, things that I had avoided or would not admit to myself before that time. Now I use my energy to correct those things that I find negative or unhealthy. I live a more conscious life. As far as not becoming bitter, I was angry for a long time, until I finally realized that my ex-husband had not deliberately set out to make my life miserable. It would have happened, to one degree or another, no matter whom he had married. Blaming him for who he is futile and does not help the situation in any way. A few months after the divorce, I was having dinner with my parents. My father began to denigrate my ex-husband. I looked at my father and said, "Why would you say such things? Why would you hate someone like him? Don't you understand he has harmed himself more than he has me?" Bitterness and anger are emotions that tie one to the past. Had I held on to my negative emotions, I would never have been able to start my life again or ever be happy again. The last thing my former husband ever said to me was, "I've never been happy, never in my life." I'll never forget the tears that were streaming down his face, and I will never forget the pain and anguish in his voice, the isolation he felt, and most probably still feels, his fear of being alone and isolated in the world, stills any feelings of anger against him. I had been happy in the past. I knew I would be happy again someday. Yet for someone like him, who had never known happiness, what of him? I abandoned him, just as he felt everyone else had done in his life. I felt a sense of terrible guilt for a long time, but if I was to survive, I had to let go of it. I could not help this man, and I could not destroy myself. And finally, Rachel Ryland, author of Get Me Out of Here, My Recovery from Borderline Personality Disorder, posted this note to Welcome to Oz to show that recovery is indeed possible. Rachel, BP. There were plenty of times I felt far worse than when I started it all, and I wondered if I would have been better off never having known about my illness and never having entered therapy. My entire way of thinking had to be disassembled and rebuilt, and for someone inherently struggling with uncertainty about identity, there were dauntingly frightening times when I had disassembled the old ways of thinking but had not yet adopted new ones. During that time, I looked into a dark hole of nothingness and wondered if I had any identity at all. Luckily, with the help of an excellent psychiatrist and the support of my husband and children, I recovered from BPD. Yet I know enough to realize that what happened to me doesn't always happen in the case of all borderlines. Some BPs are unwilling to take the journey. Other borderlines are outright incapable of it. And thus, I would never expect that everyone close to a borderline stay in the relationship. In some cases, perhaps many cases, it is necessary and wise to protect oneself and move on with life. Yet at other times, if you hang around, you will be rewarded in the end with a relationship that is closer and better than you had dreamed possible. One of the most profound lessons I learned in my journey was the incredible capacity that people have for goodness, that this world, despite its trials, pains, and injustices, is indeed a miraculous place. It is filled with as much love and kindness as it is with hatred. I have emerged from all of this with a view of life that will never, ever be the same as it was.
and that has made all of the pain and struggle eminently worth it. In this book, you've learned what BPD is, why people with BPD act the way they do, the part that you play in the dynamic, and how to take back control of your life. But as complex as BPD behavior can be, obtaining knowledge is the easy part. Now comes the wisdom, taking what you've learned and applying it to your own life. This may happen in many ways, including questioning long-standing beliefs and values, facing issues that you've been avoiding for years, revisiting the unspoken bargain you've struck with the BP in your life, that their needs and views are always, always more important and more right than yours. No one can hold up this kind of bargain very long without seriously compromising their own mental health. We can't promise that it will be easy, but we can promise that it will be worthwhile. In the process, you will find out what you really value and who you really are. You will discover strengths you didn't know you had. Few things in life are more important than this. As William Shakespeare said 400 years ago, "This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the day the night, thou canst not then be false to any man." Hamlet, Act 1, Scene 3, Lines 78 to 80. We hope that the knowledge and tools you've gained from this book serve you well on the rest of your journey. Appendix A, Causes and Treatment of BPD. Much of the information in this appendix has been taken from The Essential Family Guide to Borderline Personality Disorder by Randy Krieger, the co-author of this book. Risk factors for BPD. There is no single cause of BPD. Instead, there are several risk factors that, when present, increase the chances that a person develops BPD. The risk factors fall into two categories, biological and environmental. A biological vulnerability to BPD, combined with a problematic environment, can lead to the development of BPD. In some people, biological risk factors may predominate. For others, environmental risk factors will play a larger role. Biological factors. Malfunctions in neurotransmitter levels, as well as other abnormalities in the neurotransmitter system, can lead to problems such as impaired reasoning, impulsivity, and unstable emotions. The physical brain, too, can be impaired. The amygdala controls the intensity of our emotions and our ability to return to normal after sharp emotions have been aroused. Brain scans show that in people with BPD, the amygdala is more active than those of control subjects. Robert O. Friedel, M.D., suggests that there is not a single specific gene for borderline personality disorder. He says it appears that the genes that increase risk for the disorder may be passed on by those people who have the disorder itself or a related disorder, such as bipolar disorder, depression, substance use disorders, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Friedel says it's vital to understand that BPD is the result of instability in specific neural pathways in the brain, and problematic behaviors are not intentional or willful. Research will give us a better understanding of biological risk factors, which will result in more effective treatment. Environmental factors. It's a myth that BPD is a result of some form of childhood abuse. Yes, many people with BPD have been the victim of abuse, abandonment, neglect, or other mistreatment, sometimes for years. But we don't really know how many fit that pattern because of flaws in research. Studies only reflect BPs within the mental health system and who are suicidal and self-harming. They're not a true random sample of the entire population with BPD because the entire higher-functioning population is excluded. Another issue is that the claims of abuse are self-reported and may lack a standardized definition of abuse. Environmental factors, abuse, neglect, childhood trauma of many different kinds, do appear to trigger BPD in someone who may be genetically predisposed to the condition. Friedel calls these environmental burdens. In addition to abuse, environmental burdens might include ineffective parenting,
anything from inadequate parental skills to mental illness or substance abuse, an unsafe and chaotic home situation, a clash between the disposition of child and parent, the sudden loss of a caregiver or the caregiver's attention, even common things such as the birth of a new baby, which the child perceives as abandonment. Treatment. The great news is that new forms of treatment are showing success. More about that in a minute. But if you're eager to seek treatment for your loved one, make sure that he or she sincerely wants to make changes for his or her own reasons, not just because you or someone else has given an ultimatum. Medication. Medications help reduce BPD symptoms such as depression, mood swings, dissociation, aggression, and impulsivity. This kind of treatment is very complicated because the details of how brain chemistry provokes BPD symptoms can vary widely from one patient to the next. Doctors using drugs to treat BPD have to be specially trained, and patients need careful monitoring. Common medications are antipsychotics such as olanzapine, Zyprexa, antidepressants such as sertraline, Zoloft, or Zenlafaxine, Effexor, mood stabilizers like divalproex sodium, Depakote, or lamotrigine, Lamictal. Psychotherapy. There are several structured programs just for people with BPD who are motivated to work on their problems. These structured treatments seem to produce better results than treatment as usual. This may be due to factors, though, that are not exclusive to these treatments, including specialized clinician training, which gives them more effective tools, clinician education, which gives treatment providers a more positive attitude about recovery and working with patients, treatment twice a week instead of once, the opportunity to interact with peers who have the same disorder. All of these treatments focus on problematic borderline behaviors, but they vary as to the importance of the healing relationship between the therapist and the patient. Ultimately, for most patients, the decisions about treatment come down to what programs are available, the best fit between therapist and client, health insurance coverage, and other factors. Dialectical Behavior Therapy. Dialectical Behavior Therapy, DBT, is probably the best-known structured treatment for BPD. Developed by Marsha Linehan, Ph.D., DBT essentially teaches clients to accept themselves as they are, which then enables them to make changes in their behavior. People enrolled in DBT programs typically attend weekly group skills training sessions to learn how to tolerate distress, regulate their emotions, become more mindful, and improve their interpersonal skills. They also meet weekly with an individual therapist. Mindfulness is one of the core concepts of DBT. You can learn more about it in Appendix B. Mindfulness is about being in the moment and observing what is happening around you, noticing your emotions without being consumed by them. People who consider entering DBT need to be willing to faithfully attend therapy and fill out daily diary forms. You can find out more about DBT, including finding a DBT therapist, at www.behavioraltech.com. Mentalization-based therapy. Mentalization-based therapy, MBT, is a specific type of psychotherapy designed to help people with BPD focus on the following: making a distinction between their thoughts and those of others, recognizing how thoughts, feelings, wishes, and desires are linked to behavior, something that is an element in most established therapies, though with MBT, it's the major focus. The focus of MBT is on the interaction between the patient and the therapist, unlike DBT, which focuses on skills training. The goals of MBT include better relationships with others and improved control over emotions and behaviors. The relationship between client and therapist is considered a vital part of treatment, whereas DBT targets dysfunctional behavior. Schema therapy. According to its founders, schemas are entrenched, self-defeating life patterns that can occur when vital needs are not met in childhood. They say that our schema modes are triggered by life situations that we are oversensitive to, our emotional triggers. These can lead us to overreact to situations or to act in ways that end up hurting us. The goals of schema therapy include helping people access their true feelings, turn off the self-defeating schema modes, and get their emotional needs met in relationships. STEPS Group Treatment Program. STEPS stands for Systems Training for Emotional Predictability and Problem Solving. It is popular in the Netherlands and is meant to be used in addition to, not as a replacement for, traditional therapy. Like DBT, STEPS has a skills training approach. Family members are an important aspect of this program. They learn how to reinforce and support the patient's new skills. This program has three stages: awareness of illness, emotion management skills training, and behavior management skills training. Finding a therapist. Unfortunately, these structured treatments are not widely available. They can also be expensive. Since each clinician has his or her own unique brand of therapy, even if they come from the same schools of thought, finding the right therapist is a bit like searching for a job. Therapists who treat BPD should have several qualities. They believe recovery is possible. They know about the latest research and understand the role of brain disorder in people with BPD. They can articulate specific goals for therapy that are realistic, especially within the time limits that a health insurance plan might set for the therapy. They have support from their colleagues for treating BPD. They are confident in their own ability, and they are savvy about how BPs can behave. They are compassionate toward the BP, but smart enough not to get sucked in emotionally by the BP's dysfunctional ways of relating to others, including therapists. One way to find a psychiatrist is to develop a list of the best hospitals in your community for psychiatric care. Make sure you include teaching hospitals. Then, call each one and speak to the psychiatric unit nurse manager or the medical staff administrative assistant. Ask for the names of psychiatrists who specialize in treating personality disorders. Don't mention BPD specifically at this stage. Then, check the names you're given against the directory for your insurance plan or HMO. Then, call the individual clinician's office and ask the staff about his or her experience in treating personality disorders. Listen for the tone of their response and choose those clinicians whose employees seem to be enthusiastic about their bosses. Once you find the right psychiatrist, you can ask for referrals to other types of clinicians, such as therapists. Once you have narrowed the list to a few doctors, make an appointment and ask each doctor the following questions. Do you treat people with BPD? If so, how many have you treated? How do you define BPD? What do you believe causes BPD? What is your treatment plan for borderline clients? Do you believe people with BPD can get better? Have you personally treated BPs who have improved? How much do you know about the stresses of living with someone with the disorder? Your goal is to pick someone with experience in treating personality disorders who understands that some BPs are high-functioning and can cause particular problems, and who understand the real causes of BPD. You want to be sure the clinician doesn't wrongly believe that BPD always results from parental abuse, for example. Finally, you want one who offers a treatment plan that is flexible and has specific, concrete, attainable goals. The chapter Finding Professional Help in The Essential Family Guide to Borderline Personality Disorder covers these topics and goes into more detail about finding unstructured therapy, including how to assess the quality of the therapy and the reputation of the therapist. Appendix B, Practicing Mindfulness. Mindfulness for friends and loved ones of BPs. One essential component of dialectical behavioral therapy, DBT, that has proven very effective for people with BPD is mindfulness. Treatment for BPD often begins with learning mindfulness skills, and the BP repeatedly practices these skills throughout treatment. These same mindfulness skills can also be beneficial for non-BPs who are coping with the BPD symptoms of loved ones. In fact, for the past decade, the National Educational Alliance for Borderline Personality Disorder, NEA-BPD, has taught mindfulness skills in its Family Connections program, which offers education, skills training, and support to family members of people with BPD. To learn more about the program, visit www.neabpd.org/family-connections. Mindfulness is awareness without judgment. As mindfulness researcher Jon Kabat-Zinn notes, mindfulness is the ability to be aware of your thoughts, emotions, physical sensations, and actions in the present moment without judging or criticizing yourself or your experience. Some people call this being centered. Others call it encountering one's true self. People with BPD are often ruled by their emotions. This can lead them to destructive and impulsive actions, such as drug use, risky sexual encounters, and self-injury. In DBT, the goal of mindfulness is to get BPs to recognize these patterns of strong emotion and risky behavior so they can act more thoughtfully and less impulsively. In DBT language, the goal of mindfulness is to practice and achieve wise mind, a balance between reasonable mind and emotional mind, or, as some clinicians say, emotion mind. With a wise mind, we are able to experience life as it comes to us and appreciate the ambiguity and the shades of gray that we often encounter. We are in reasonable mind when we approach knowledge from an intellectual and rational point of view. In reasonable mind, our emotions are put away and our responses are planned and controlled. In contrast, we are in emotional mind when our thinking and behavior are controlled by our current emotional state. In emotional mind, rational thinking is difficult, and facts may be distorted to match or validate our feelings. With a wise mind, our emotions and thoughts work together. As a result, we act appropriately and smoothly, even if our life and relationships feel temporarily out of control. When we are mindful, we are open to life on its own terms, fully aware of each moment as it arises and as it passes away. In the Dialectical Behavior Therapy Skills Workbook, Matthew McKay, Jeffrey Wood, and Jeffrey Brantley remind us that to be fully aware of your experiences in the present moment, it's necessary that you do so without criticizing yourself, your situation, or other people. The creator of DBT, Marsha Linehan, calls this radical acceptance. These two words also form the title of a 2004 book by psychologist and meditation teacher Tara Brach. Radical acceptance allows us to focus on the here and now and to avoid the mental and emotional traps of focusing on what might lie ahead or what happened in the past. This can be especially helpful when coping with the unpredictable and confusing behaviors associated with BPD. Mindfulness, and DBT in general, help people with BPD stay off the emotional roller coaster associated with black and white thinking. Over time, people who regularly practice mindfulness tend to be better at enduring pain, solving problems, and not creating turmoil and stress in their lives and relationships. Notice, though, that the goal of mindfulness isn't to experience profound happiness or a life without stress or trouble. We all have the capacity to be mindful. It's a skill anyone can learn. There's nothing mysterious about it. We simply pay attention to the present moment. When mental clutter appears, we let it appear and let it fade away again. Over and over, we return to the here and now. This isn't usually as easy as it sounds, especially as we're first learning it. But everyone gets better at it with practice. In the process, we also learn a lot about ourselves, others, and our relationships. Practicing mindfulness can help you achieve a better balance between your rational mind and your emotional mind. This puts you in a better position to respond wisely to distressing situations in a balanced, healthy manner. You'll also make better decisions, improve your relationships, and optimize your potential for physical and mental relaxation. The Dialectical Behavior Therapy Skills Workbook offers an excellent introduction to mindfulness, as well as many suggestions and opportunities for practice. Mindfulness Exercise Number 1. Focus on an object. The purposes of this exercise are to focus your mind on a single object